Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. Lee, you're going to enjoy this one. This is this guy is with your athletic club. That's why you're so buff.
I don't know about that. I'm buff for radio. I'm not buff for the real world.
You're a walking, talking billboard for not only this guy's work, but the entire Concourse Athletic Club, right?
I don't think that's exactly true.
No, this is going to be a lot of fun. This guy's doing some great work over there. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast with the Concourse Athletic Club, Mr. Rob Wilkins. Good afternoon, sir.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You got to get in there.
Oh, okay. You're
much closer than you'd like.
You got to eat that microphone like a rock star.
Karaoke right? Close, man. Karaoke close.
That's a bad thing. I'm not very good at karaoke either. So thank you very much for having me.
Well, Rob, can you tell us a little bit about the Concourse Athletic Club? Why don't you start there, and then we'll get into the squash courts that you're in charge of.
Okay, so Concourse Athletic Club is a boutique gym. It has many facilities and amenities that our members can enjoy. We pride ourselves on community, and as you just mentioned, I'm the squash director there.
So now, squash is a sport that, do you know the history of squash?
I do actually know a lot of this stuff. So squash started out as a prison sport.
A prison sport?
Yeah. So,
Australia?
From the UK.
From the UK.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So it started out like that, and it evolved over many generations. It got to hardball and then moved over to softball, which is now called our squash.
Uh-huh. And then so in squash, you're inside of a court that's has walls around all the side and the ceiling as well?
Yeah, walls, about 600 square foot, and you smack a hollow rubber ball against the wall as hard as you can.
And the ceiling is in play or not in play?
The ceiling is out of play now.
Out of play. And then there's a metal thing at the bottom.
Yep,
is that out of play too?
That's our tin, where we like to brand our sponsors and everything on there.
So, but you're not allowed to hit it that low?
You can if you want to make a loud noise.
But is it in play?
No, it's out of play. Yeah.
And then, so it looks kind of like racquetball. But the racket looks kind of like a tennis racket. It's like in the middle of both of those.
Yeah, so racquetball is, I don't want to offend any of the racquetball members, but it's an easier sport than squash. You can use the ceiling, you can use the floor to serve off. But the squash game is much harder strategically. You do more running and is deemed to be the healthiest sport in the world by Forbes.
And then when you're playing squash, is it one against one, two against two?
It's traditionally one against one, although you can have softball doubles, which is always fun and dangerous at the same time.
Because you can get hit with the
racket. Rackets, balls, yeah.
And that's not fun.
No.
So now, in your program, when the Concourse started, I've been a member of the Concourse, full disclosure, for several years now. Probably, when did you get there?
So I joined the team January 2016.
Okay, so fairly recently.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen a lot of people there previously, and then now I see a lot of people there. So I'm assuming that is attributed to your skills as a director of squash.
So because of Rob, exactly.
I'd love to think so. I think that is the reason why, though. I don't want to be big-headed there. So I asked my general manager to give me a chance to let me run a program in a way that I thought would work. We've seen best practice squash work around the world, and we wanted to bring it down to Atlanta, and that's what we've done for 2.5 years.
And then. In your model of squash, running it from a program standpoint, it's kind of to build from the children up or juniors up?
Yeah, so the foundation of squash starts from the juniors all the way through to the adults. Mm-hmm. The problem with when I got there was a lot of adults, no juniors, so we really tried to flip it around and work from there.
And then how'd you go about doing that?
It was just really introducing the sport to new players, getting them on court, giving them a racket and then, you know, getting them to hit a few balls and having fun with them and creating that community and friendship, which I think is the most important part of squash.
So you were starting it from the novice player? You weren't going after the experienced tournament player?
No, there's not many down here. There's a few, but there are few and far between, and they don't really want to travel to a new program. So we started from grassroots and developed all of our juniors. Obviously now, 2 years on, we have players ranked comfortably in the top 100, and we try and make sure all of our players follow the correct path of US squash.
And then what does that mean, the correct path?
So really there's only one way to do squash properly, and that is a junior player will play in nationally sanctioned tournaments. The more they play, the higher their ranking will go. When I got down here, there was only one other pro, Ahmed Hamza from Piedmont Driving Club, that was trying to enforce a model, but I think he needed that help. And I had a bit more drive to be more vocal in our community than he was. And I pushed everyone to do it the right way. And we really concentrated on equal participation. So boys and girls have to be matched up. It couldn't be just all boys or all girls. We wanted to be down the middle.
So it's the kind of gender equality on the squash court.
It is. And that's kind of how our tournaments looped into them as well.
And then so when they're coming, when they're playing in the tournaments, are they, is it gender neutral or there's boys and girls?
It's boys and girls divisions from under 11 boys to under 19 boys, and the same on the girls' side, under 11 girls, mm-hmm. under 19 girls.
But the way that you're training them mixed together.
Yeah, because what we want to concentrate on is we don't want to split a boy from a girl or, you know, an age of 3 years difference. If a player is good enough to be in that group, it doesn't matter what sex they are, what height they are. It's irrelevant to us. It's about the best squash we can do.
And then when you're teaching the sport, is it something that, like, what are some of the tips on learning squash? Is it like learning any other racket sport?
It is, yeah. And I think foundation is the most important
part. So the form is, like, that's, like, I used to play tennis. Form was critical if you wanted to excel. Like, you might be able to play recreationally and not have great form, but if you really wanted to excel, you had to have proper form.
And that, yeah, that's bang on, because one of the things, we've had new players joining us over the years now, and we have to strip some of the game apart to rebuild it up. Some of the players that didn't agree with that, they've seen it 2 years on, going to tournaments, and they can see now that they need to go backwards to go forwards again.
Right. So then that's the unlearning process, which is always the hardest to coach, right?
I enjoy that bit because I'm a really technical coach, so I find it great. I love going through even the slightest movements in the hand, how to shape out the form, the weight transfer. I find that stuff fascinating. My kids don't, but I do. So they just crack on with it and just amuse me.
Now, what about the use of video? Do you use the video when you're coaching?
We do. We have free GoPros that we use on occasions, depending on the player's level. For beginners, we kind of try and make it more fun. For the advanced players, the ones that travel with us around the US, we really concentrate on those videos. We can show them in slow motion how they turn and twist onto shots, their movements to and from and around the court to make it easier for them.
Now, is in squash, is it a wrist sport or not so much?
So I don't want to go in depth on all the different styles, but you can use a lot of your wrist to play the squash and how you direct the ball, but traditionally it's more arm and swing.
So that goes back to the importance of being technical in the form.
Correct, yeah.
Because there's a lot of margin of error.
And there's a lot of different styles of play. And for example, I'm a rackets man. I like to use my wrist more than some of my other players or other pros that will use more swing. It just gives more deception on the ball. Someone can't really see what you're doing, which for me is a great advantage because I don't like running.
And that's one of the kind of the tricks of the trade. The better you are, the less you have to run, right?
Correct. Although I'm starting to find out that's not what it is anymore.
So now there's a lot, not a lot, but there are some tournaments that happen around the area. There's one happening at the concourse, is that right?
That's correct. One of the things that when we set the program out was to do these tournaments, to host silver tournaments, to get around the US with our juniors for tournaments. And then we always wanted to have the largest tournament here. So what we did after about 2 years of really working on it was to have an equal pay tournament where men and women are paid equally for the prize fund. And we have a $15,000 men's draw and a $15,000 women's draw. It's the first women's pro tournament here in over 20 years. So we're really excited to have all these top pros coming in and joining us, competing for the top prize.
Now, how did you get the, who's funding that?
We have some great sponsors and patrons that have seen, similar to you, seen me at the club, working with kids and adults and doing our crazy stuff there. And they said, well, we'll give you some money to do something a bit different. So we thought, okay, we can expand upon this. Keith Clemens is our primary sponsor at the club. He's really stood behind us and just said, look, we believe in you. What do you need from me?
He's a member?
He is a member. He's a great guy. I always call him the peanut. But he really works with us to help find and develop the program to new levels. And that's what we've done this year.
And then, so the tournament is only the winners get money, or how is it distributed?
So in the main draw, if you've reached the main draw, we're going through qualifying yesterday and today. The minute you're in, you get paid. And then the further you go through into the finals, you get paid more money.
And then what's the top prize get?
So $15,000 is split between all the players as total prize fund.
Right. So the top player, do you know what they'll get? Or is that math?
That's math that I would need to look out. Luckily, we have an organization that does that piece for me.
So now, so then everybody's getting paid once they make the main draw.
Correct.
And then how many players make the main draw?
We have 16 in the main draw per division.
And then the divisions are multiple divisions per gender?
So it's male and female.
So those are the two divisions.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter the age. It's an open tournament.
Doesn't matter the age. We have some juniors playing the tournaments. We have some seasoned adults playing the tournament.
Oh, so it's all mixed together.
Yep.
So do you have a dark horse that you're rooting for?
Oh, I do, but if they're listening, I can't say it.
All right, so I stepped out for a minute to get our other guest and wrangle him in here. So I may have missed this. Maybe you covered this. The court you play on, is it a different court than the racquet ball court or same place?
It's actually slightly different because the side walls are 6 inches shorter on a racquet ball court than a squash court.
Right.
And the length is obviously shorter. I wouldn't want to try and run a racquet ball court playing squash.
All right, so this is in a different place at the Concourse Athletic Club. And then can someone like me swing by the grill, grab a beer, and then come watch some of this?
Absolutely.
That's
Some great pro matches on. We have the finals of the qualifying tonight. We've had some major upsets last night. So it's going to be exciting to see what happens later on.
That would be a lot of fun, right?
Yeah. And so it's open to the public to view?
It is, yeah. So it's $20 a day or $55 for the week.
And to watch all the matches?
Correct, yeah.
And you got to go in that little back room if you want to gamble. You can't tell anybody.
Don't tell anyone.
No wagering. No wagering.
No wagering. Officially. No wagering.
And then, so how do you see the program evolving?
So we've made some major moves this year, actually. Last year, we started our summer camp. So we wanted to do something a bit different where we invited top pros in. So we had two former world number ones come in. That was great. Our kids loved it. We got some other top pros to come in as well. And we kind of saw an opportunity to help our players a bit differently where we can get them on court with these pros, kind of introduce them to the colleges, the Ivy League schools that eventually where they'll be playing.
Because there's scholarship opportunity for squash players?
There is and there's not. This is a common misconception that a lot of players have. They think, yeah, I'm going to get a scholarship if I'm ranked top 10 in the US. You have a higher chance of getting in for the scholarship part. It all depends where you go and really how highly you're ranked.
Mm-hmm.
So we have one girl in the tournament that I would say the scholarship option may be possible for her because she is that good at such a young age.
So now for you, when you're working with a young player, how quickly can you tell if they have what it takes?
I've always been proud to say I can always tell within an hour, really a full potential, but I'm a great believer in grit. So some players that aren't great can be fantastic and other players that look great can be horrific down the line, but it's not about necessarily the coaching. It's about working with the player individually. And that's what we try to do with our program. We sit down and explain it. We sit down and create those relationships and really get them to understand it the way that I do and other pro does. And the more they understand, the better they can be.
Now, how do you work on the mental toughness part of the game?
That's a fun one. I have to admit, I don't have the best approach for this because I know I don't really follow guidelines or books. I have a different approach of every player. So I actually spend a lot of time with them off the court. I have one student that came to our house a couple of weeks ago to do some gardening with me. And I got to try and get in his head a bit and explain some of the stuff that he needs to do and needs to learn. And it started to help his game.
So like what's a kind of a common weakness that people have mentally?
Fitness is a huge part of the mental game for me. I have numerous students, and I'll say even myself, when you are a really skilled player, it's great and you think you're skilled, but the minute you start running, you just can't concentrate. It's really hard to really think about what you need to do because you just feel like you're under pressure so much that you don't have any time to settle. So we really concentrate on the fitness side so that we can go back into the mental and then give them more options. You know, this is what you can do in this situation, for example.
So because the fitness, if you know you're more physically fit, then you know you can play all day. You can take what's coming.
Yeah. And most players, their average heart rate in a professional match or even a season match is around 190, 190 beats a minute. And it stays quite high throughout the match.
Really? So there's no rest period where you can kind of breathe and regroup?
There is. You can get these sneaky moments where you can chuck the ball off court by accident, which I've done a few times. otherwise, you get 90 seconds in between each game.
90 seconds between games. What about between points? Is there a timer on that as well?
You are kind of told in the rules to make a continuous play. So you have 3 to 10 seconds, depending how far you threw the ball out the court.
Mm-hmm. So now, when you're doing these tournaments, this is just one tournament. That throughout the year, there'll be other tournaments?
Yeah, so our goal is with this one is to create a benchmark. This is the largest tournament that's ever existed in the Southeast. And what we want to do is really create a focal point around this one tournament and sort of build on it. So next year, we want to have a larger prize fund. Mm-hmm. We also want to expand this tournament and start bridging it up into the Northeast and creating a tour that's based from down here. And then our juniors and adults will also play in these tournaments this weekend, but not at a professional level. And obviously, we have 5 to 6, 7 tournaments throughout the season in this district as well.
And then when you're working with the juniors to get them interested in the sport, is this are the people coming into squash? Are they coming from Europe? Are they coming from Asia? Like what part of the world do kind of squash players come from?
So the pro players come from all over the world. I mean, this is a $15,000 tournament. There's a lot of pros that really want the prize money. There's other pros that want to get the points for the tournament so they can get their ranking up. So we have Egyptians, Indians, English, Welsh, US players. We have a lot of different flags that I need to sort out later on, but we have a lot of players traveling from around the world here.
Because it's an international sport.
It is, yeah.
And then so is the club really going after some of the youngsters and from those different nationalities to bring a more diverse group into the club?
I think for the club side, they kind of just let me run with it. And I think they're still trying to catch up to what I'm trying to do. But the goal is to really bring a new level of play in from anywhere in the world. We're great believers in anyone that can play squash should be here with us.
But the way to get the word out to the youngsters, that's the part I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around. Like, how are you letting people know? I guess the parents who may have played squash, to even let them know there's facilities like this available to play, because there's not that many facilities to play, right?
That's correct. And one of the things that I've always been bad at, and I'll be honest, I don't advertise. I'm a great believer in if you create a good program, people will come to it. And also we kind of pick and choose who we work with, because we spend so much time with each player, and we also financially assist these players. We don't want to have too many coming in,
right?
Because then we lose quality on it. And then I don't want to just be another program. We want it to be a benchmark of what squash coaching can be.
Now, are you helping the youngsters get involved as maybe as they develop, then they have to mentor other youngsters?
Luckily, the program hasn't got to that stage yet, but we are starting to look at it now. We only hire squash professionals. So myself and Adewale Amoa, Nigerian squash pro, that is our team at the moment. We're actually looking to expand to a third and obviously keep building up from there. But we do want our juniors, when they come of age, to really assist the new players coming in, or at least be the role model to the next generation.
And then what are you most excited about as this program evolves?
I think for me, it's just the fact that we can say that we created the impossible down here. No one's been able to do this. My predecessors at the club have tried. It's a difficult market. And I don't think I can put that down to, you know, how good I am as a coach, but I think we can put that down to the relationships that we've created. I have players that have left and gone on to colleges and schools elsewhere around the US, and we still keep in touch. And that for me is more important than results or, you know, being in the limelight. I'm quite happy in the background doing the work so everyone else can get what they need.
Now, what about for you? Are you still playing, or you're spending your time kind of growing the program? Do you have time to play anymore?
I stopped playing in 2006. For me, financially, it was very difficult to be on the tour. I couldn't make it work where I lived. And I've always kind of enjoyed doing this. So I thought in 2012, I moved out to the US with my wife to start coaching. And I just had an absolute passion for it. I could see why my mother coached. I could see why my brother coached. And it's all I want to do now.
Now, is there, there's a nonprofit organization around squash you're involved with as well?
It is. It's called A Plus Squash. It's, I'm also the squash director for that program. We assist kids from Atlanta, downtown Atlanta, and give them the opportunity to play squash whilst learning academics with the goal to get them to college.
And then where do people learn more about that program?
If you go online, it should be aplussquash.org, and there's a lot of information on there. It also shows what we do and our benchmarks and goals.
I think it would be fun to go down and watch these pros. I think we ought to try to get that done.
Well, Stone was a table tennis champion.
at a South Alabama college. that puts you in some perspective. We can talk more about that off air. Okay, let's make sure our listeners have coordinates for going down to watch, or if they want to just learn more about this program, best way to reach out to you or someone on your team to have a conversation?
So the best way to reach us is to either go online or come down to the club. So the online website is concourseclub.com, or you can go down to the club at 8 Concourse Parkway in Sandy Springs. If you want to come down for this weekend, please go to the club, the front desk. There'll be someone that will direct you to the matches.
Fantastic. Hey, how about staying with us? We're going to visit with one more guest. All right. Next up on the High Velocity Radio Show this afternoon, we have with us with Compass Events, spelled cleverly with a K, incidentally, Mr. Keith Wilson. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. How's it going, guys?
Well, it goes better. There's a button over here that I push that is connected to your microphone. Uh-huh. And when I push it down, you sound so much richer. Try that again.
It sounds good. Good to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about Compass? How are you serving folks?
Yeah, so Compass is an event sharing platform, a mobile app that I developed that helps users share, discover, and explore events in all of the different cities. You know, really what we try to do is help connect people, you know, with all types of events going on. We think about Atlanta, there's so much going on in the city, but even with a city as big as Atlanta, with so many events going on, it could be difficult to find things to do still. And so we help try to alleviate that problem by, you know, allowing people who are in the know to share that information on a mobile app with others.
So since Rob's doing the squash event, he can put that in your app.
He sure can. Yep.
See that? Look, everybody's helping everybody here. So it's not just entertainment events. It could be sporting events. It could be business networking events. It could be any type of event.
Right. Yeah, it could be social events. It could be community events, political events, any type of social type of activity that people would want to know about and want to engage in.
So now, do you develop it? Or is it specifically for Atlanta, or this is can be used anywhere in the world?
Yeah, so it can be used anywhere in the world. Right now, we have users all over the world, you know, different parts of the country, different parts of the world. We are pulling events as well, all, you know, across the nation and across the world. So, yeah, it could be used anywhere.
So you're scraping the internet for events and then putting it, populating your app?
Yep. So, yeah, that's really how we started. So me and a couple of buddies of mine, you know, I had to kind of rope them along with, you know, a pack of beer and a couple of burgers.
Is that how that's the startup
standard
methodology?
Marketing procedure.
Exactly. That's what you call bootstrapping right there. A couple of burgers and a pack of beer, you know, for them to kind of help me, you know, basically go on different websites, find different events, post those events in the app. But now we've, you know, really tapped into other event type of platforms to where we're naturally pulling their events into our app.
And then for you, are you the technologist that did the code, or are you the marketer, or are you the businessman?
Yeah, so I'm more of a hybrid of the marketer and the businessman. So I've outsourced a lot of my code. And my brother, who's my co-founder, he's more the technical guy. So he helps out with the code piece as well.
So he's the smart one?
Yes. He's the brains. I'm the beauty.
All right. So where's the money in all this? How does the money work?
Yeah. So currently we're pre-revenue. You know, really was trying to focus on building up a solid user experience.
You know, I'd never heard that word till about a year and a half ago. We started interviewing all these startups and, yeah, and with these angel investors. Yep. For those of you who don't know, pre-revenue means they're not making any money yet.
Exactly. It's a fancy way.
That's all right. I mean, that's okay, but that's what that means, right?
Right. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, yeah. That's exactly what that means. We're pre-revenue. And that's mainly because we haven't built in the capability to generate revenue, but we will be generating revenue by advertising. So, you know, we are based on a map, right? So we have a map that people can basically post events similar to Waze, right? So when you're using Waze, you'll be able to kind of go and navigate to different places. You'll see pins or billboards with different businesses or different franchises. So we'll be, you know, monetizing that way as well.
So then it'll be kind of the person, if they want to advertise locally, they just go online. There's no interaction with the human being, right? They'll be able to just buy ads.
Right. So they'll be able to go in and buy ads. And, you know, like I said, we haven't really built that into the app right now, but that's really how we see it working out. So they'll be able to basically go in, buy ads, and basically based on impressions, they'll be charged.
And then, and that'll be all automatic, just like,
Mm-hmm. Yep, sure will.
But he'll be able to keep the rates reasonable, I think, if you can build that in where you don't have to hire a human or a team of humans. Mm-hmm. They do some sort of algorithm. Maybe if I go at 2:00 in the morning and I really want to, you know, focus in on Swanee.
Right.
Then if the machine can handle it, I get a really nice rate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
But it's the brother that's got to figure all that out. You're just going to play golf.
Yeah, I'm just going to play golf.
Watch squash tournaments.
Right.
And just
hire more guys, you know, to put more events with, you know, a few extra beer, cases of beer.
So now when you're doing that, are you going to use a reverse auction, or how is the pricing of the ad? Like, do you just arbitrarily come up with what an ad's
Definitely. So we're still working on kind of the pricing model in particular. Like I said, we haven't really pushed that piece of the app yet. That's kind of like phase 2.5 of the app. But it'll be more so based on kind of the days that people are wanting to advertise, right? So the popular days, you know, the Thursday, Fridays, and Saturdays will probably be the days that we'll probably spike our rates a little bit higher, as opposed to the Sunday through the Wednesdays, right? Because we simply, typically we're seeing a lot more traffic and a lot more usage of the app towards the weekends. And it's natural, right? People looking for
so right now I can go on and it's Compass Map with two P's and a K for compass.com. And then I can post my own event, right? Is there a fee for that?
No fee. So yeah, they can go on the mobile app, you know, download the mobile app. We're available on the Google Play Store and also the App Store. They can post their event for free. And, you know, yeah, it doesn't cost them a thing to post an event. We're just trying to get people on there.
Now, and then I can share the event. So like once I post, then it's easy to share. And I can I download like my email list or something like that and share it or not yet?
Not yet. But we do allow you to basically share it through, you know, other social networking platforms. So you can be able to share it in the app, on Facebook, on Instagram, you know, on Twitter, on WhatsApp. So some of the other platforms we do allow you to share it.
So now if I am the administrator of the event or the organizer of the event, will I have access to the RSVPs and the list and all that stuff?
Definitely. And that's the great thing about, you know, Compass. You know, we know that there are so many RSVP type of events here that we do allow you to have full access of the RSVP list, setting kind of the guidelines for your RSVP event. You know, how many people you want to, you know, have the RSVP? Can they bring a plus one? And they can also manage that list from within the app.
So now, who do you think is going to be the typical user of the app?
So we see the typical user of the app being, you know, two really different type of markets. So you have the travelers market. So we see a lot of travelers being, you know, the typical user of the app.
That they're looking for an event.
Exactly. They're looking for an event. And then also like promoters, you know, festival promoters, business owners looking to try to, you know, expand and promote, you know, specials and stuff like that with their businesses. We see them kind of being on the other side of the app.
So then your energies has to be focused kind of in two places. One is to kind of be the go-to place where all the events are, mm-hmm. right?
Correct.
And then you got to get in front of the people who have events because you want them to use the app as a place for them to socialize and evangelize their event.
Right, definitely. Because when you think about it, there really is no single one place that most people go to find events, right? There are a lot of different places, but there's no one mm-hmm. single place that just...
So you're fighting for that. You want to be like the Carfax.
Yeah.
Like who in their right mind would have an event without having Compass affiliated with it, right? That's nirvana for you, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we want to be that go-to place. Because think about it, guys. I mean, the Super Bowl is going to be coming up here in Atlanta, right?
Oh,
and those 10 days leading up to the Super Bowl are the most event-filled days any city can have that's probably not throwing the Olympics, right? So all with right. all of the events going on, how will we know what's going on with those events?
Right. And you're kind of event agnostic, right? Because it mm-hmm. could be a party, it could be a networking event, it could be an yep. industry event.
Exactly. Yeah, it could be any type of social event that, you know, people would want to share with others and also be able to explore.
Now, on the app, can I search, like, say I'm interested in business networking events. Can I search for business networking events in Atlanta and then they'll all show up? Is it curated like that?
Yeah. So it doesn't just curate to your style, but it basically you can search by city. All of the events within that city will pop up and then you can filter by the category of the event.
So then I can filter all the squash events out.
Yeah,
filter them in.
Yeah. That way, if I wanted to find the squash event, I can just find the squash event.
Yeah, it's just based on category. So if you wanted to just kind of categorize the parties or sporting events, you can filter down to that.
Yep. All right. So at some point, yes, there's the advertising revenue model. You gotta get that figured out. Is there maybe some other ways? Like, do you ever envision other streams of revenue? Like at some point, the squash guy is willing to pay a little bit to mm-hmm. be represented on the thing or...
Yeah, definitely.
Or maybe the top of the list.
Yeah, definitely.
There you yep. go. Yeah, the 10 best, whatever, attorneys, yep. CPAs, squash things, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. So we do have built into it now like a featured event section. So like, you know, national events or major events that are going on, you know, that's kind of prime real estate that anybody within the app will be able to see. And also through our event feed, we will be offering advertising throughout the feed and that'll be more local.
And you can mention them on your monthly... Compass series with Business Radio X. Incidentally, our fee structure for the monthly series, uh-huh. hamburger and beer. So hey, yeah, just get with me after this and we'll iron it out.
Got it. Sounds good.
So now, what about for the person that is looking for an event and mm-hmm. then they just want to know, be in the know of this event. So then I can just Do you ping me with some notices, or is it something I have to physically go to the event every time?
Yes.
I mean, do the app every time.
Yep. So you basically just have to go in the app every time. But the cool thing is that we do allow people to follow other people, you know, kind of like on Instagram or whatnot. You can follow your friends. You can follow, you know, popular event hosts or promoters. So the moment that they post a brand new event to the app, you'll be notified.
And so there's some push notifications.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so if, okay, let's target your target market. Like, have you determined who that is?
Yeah. So our target market, as far as what we're seeing now, as far as the traffic to the app, have been, you know, we've had a lot of guys on the app. So a lot more males. We're probably about 60% males, in the age range, I'd say of about 24 to 34, 35 ish. Most of our traffic has been here in Atlanta, but we're seeing a lot of users out in LA, a lot of users in Miami as well. And we're starting to see a lot of users pick up in New York as well.
All right. You guys are very patient and I appreciate that. And I think you've got a solid model here and I'm looking forward to seeing it evolve. But this whole pre-revenue thing's got me a little bit sideways. So can we get a little broader in our definition of an event? Like, could an event be the 2 o'clock High Velocity Radio Show on Friday? And then, mm-hmm. So the High Velocity Radio Show is pays money because they want the people in your world to know that we got this event coming up called 2 o'clock. And oh, by the way, it's featuring the, you know, the Southeast premier squash coach,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
You cool with calling that an event?
Yeah, that's
and
an event.
Maybe, and then letting somebody write you a check?
Yeah, I am totally open with that. Right. Yeah, I'm totally open with that.
Does the pre-revenue thing doesn't bother you as much, Ellie? You're a more patient man than me.
Well, you gotta figure it out. And that's like, you got to figure out what the market will buy and what they want, right? Isn't that exactly. What you're learning?
Exactly. That's what we're learning right now. And we just launched in January, right? So we're still really getting this thing up. And for us to have over 1,000 downloads, right? Only being in the market for what, 4 or 5-ish months.
Okay. You've got some encouraging indicators.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. We've got a database of over 35,000 events. Like I said, we've got over 1,000 downloads.
Yeah, well, we were a nonprofit in January. I can show you the books.
Yeah.
So, no, maybe that's the scar tissue. Maybe that's why I'm so sensitive.
Right. Totally understood.
So what do you need more of? Are you looking for, is this self-funded or is this, you have VC or who's funding this?
Yeah, so we're totally bootstrapped. We are all self-funded.
Wow.
We're totally, you know, doing this thing right now, but we are, you know, at the point where we are starting to look and try to open up a seed round for investors.
Is this your job or is this, you have a day job and you're doing this?
Yeah, I do have a day job, but, you know, I envision, you know, this one day being my day job.
Sure.
You know,
what about your brother?
Yep. He has a day job as well. You know, when I'm not badgering him over the phone or through email or text, you know, to try to update this or update that. But yeah, we're both working on this.
Did you have to go home and like tell a significant other? You know, I got this job, sweetie, but I'm going to do this or
no,
you took advantage of the timing in your life that where exactly. You don't have to answer it.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm trying to envision me going home and telling Holly that, I'm doing this thing. It's pre-revenue. Don't look it up. I'll explain to you later, but it's going to be great. Right? No, it takes a lot of guts to do something this entrepreneurial. I mean, I've been kidding about it, but God love you. I mean, it takes fortitude.
Yeah, and it's definitely, you know, something out of my, you know, kind of scope because, you know, I've been working in corporate America for the past 7 or so years. So to kind of, you know, take a chance on this is different, right? It's not what I'm used to. I'm used to having a company, you know, working for a company that has, you know, all these resources at my disposal.
All right, now I am. You're the resource.
Yeah.
And then, so what can we do to help? What do you need support in?
Really, we need support in, you know, gaining more people, adding more events, you know, and really just putting the word out about Compass.
All right. Well, I think we can help you in that regard as we're doing right now. But I think off air, I can ask you for maybe another way. Maybe you can help us.
Yeah, definitely.
And
a hamburger a week.
And a beer.
I think we'll be able to help each other in this regard.
No, I think so, too.
And so if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the best way to find you? I guess in the Google store and the Apple Store?
Yep. So we're both in the Google Play Store and the Apple Store. It's Compass with a K, events. So you can search for Compass events in either one of those stores or go on the website. It's Compass with a K, Compass Map with an extra P, .com. So CompassMap.com.
Well, Keith, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. This is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor. Everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.